globale Dialoge.
Sehr Adelhoe, Mujeres en Onda, Meiter in der Luft,
Radio No, Nanoko,
Donne in Aria,
Women on Air.
Jeden Dienstag von 13 bis 14 Uhr auf Orange 94.0.
Immer abrufbar auf www.noso.at.
Herzlich willkommen bei den globalen Dialogen. In der heutigen Ausgabe hören Sie gleich zwei Beiträge. Der erste Beitrag trägt den Titel Engaging Boys and Men – Feminismus mit dem Fokus auf Männer. Es ist ein Interview mit Tanya Charles von Sonke Gender Justice Südafrika. Ein wichtiger Teil der Arbeit von Sonke Gender Justice besteht darin, Männer in Workshops für Gender-Themen zu sensibilisieren. Dabei spricht Sonke Männer in unterschiedlichen Machtpositionen und mit unterschiedlichen gesellschaftlichen Hintergründen an, etwa aus religiösen Gruppen, Regierung und Gemeinden. Tanya Charles erzählt, wie sie und ihre KollegInnen auf diese Weise ihre Vision eines gerechten Zusammenlebens umsetzen. Die Sendung gestalteten Verena Burger, Anastasia Lopez und Lisa Zeller. Im zweiten Beitrag geht es um die Sustainable Development Goals, die nachhaltigen Entwicklungsziele der Vereinten Nationen. Da die Ära der Millennium Development Goals im September 2015 zu Ende ging, verabschiedeten die Vereinten Nationen die nachhaltigen Entwicklungsziele, die sogenannten Sustainable Development Goals. Sie dienen als Entwicklungsplan für die Welt für die nächsten 15 Jahre. Ashura Kayupa-Yupa spricht mit Magdalena Kern von Kern Österreich, was die neuen Ziele bedeuten und welche Rolle die Lebensrealitäten von Frauen darin spielen. Viel Vergnügen!
Feministische Arbeit kann vielseitig sein. Tanya Charles von Sonke Gender Justice Südafrika ist Feministin und legt den Fokus ihrer Arbeit auf Männer. Sie leitet diverse Workshops und Projekte, um Männer in unterschiedlichen gesellschaftlichen Positionen für feministische Anliegen zu sensibilisieren. Dabei sind Männer der UN, der südafrikanischen Regierung, Vertreter verschiedener Religionsgruppen und auch Privatpersonen. Wir wollten mehr über ihre Arbeit erfahren.
Hallo, wir Lisa.
Hallo.
Anastasia.
Hi.
Und ich, Verena von Women on Air, sind hier mit Tanya Charles von der südafrikanischen Organisation Sonke Gender Justice. Hello, Tanya.
Hello.
It's nice to have you here. Would you please introduce yourself and the work that you do?
Okay, Yes, my name is Tanya Charles and I'm from an organization called Sonke Gender Justice that works with men and boys as well as women and girls in the attainment of gender equality in South Africa, throughout Africa and globally. So we do a lot of work on community engagement on gender equality, what it is and how to transform norms as individuals. But we also work with government, UN agencies, and in terms of partnering globally to drive campaigns that also speak to gender equality as well as policy work on this area. Yes.
Okay, thanks. Which men do you engage?
All different kinds of men. So as I mentioned before, like we work with men in communities, men and boys of different ages. But we also work with men in government, men in institutions that we like religious institutions that can also drive the gender equality message. So it's definitely a strategy of ours to engage with men that sit in different positions and that have different forms of power and different potential to influence gender equality in their circles of impact. Yeah.
Okay. So do you also address men that are not sensitized to the subject of gender equality?
Yes, all the time. I think our fledgling campaign is the One Man Can campaign. The One Man Can campaign is a fledgling campaign of Sonke Gender Justice, started around 2006. where we target or we work with men around what is gender equality, what does it mean to be a transformed man, and of course, well, in many occasions, men, you know, start off by saying, you know, what is in it for me, start off by being quite anti sort of gender equality, don't really, and I think that comes from a place of not understanding. A lot of people don't really understand what we mean when we say gender. People associated with women only, but the definition of gender is about relations between men and women. So it means that men need to be involved and engaged. So we take them through a 12-week process where we talk about different aspects of gender and power and women's rights, and the hope and the evidence shows that at the end there is transformation and change. Yeah, from being quite, what is this, to accepting and being activists on gender issues. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, you also mentioned it, but perhaps you can describe it more precisely. Like, how do you engage these men?
Yeah, so we have our One Man Can workshop, which I mentioned, which is a 12-week program with men in communities around behavior change. We're also a part of other projects. Like, we have a national campaign called Brothers for Life, which is an anti-violence campaign. And what we do there, on one level also, is to make visible men who've stopped being violent, share their stories and profile them as beacons of transformed men, so that other men have examples of this. I think we've recognized and find it important to highlight and make visible the men who are making a difference, not only the men who are perpetrating violence or who are anti-gender equality, but there are lots of stories of transformation that we use as inspiration for the work that we do. So there's the One Man Can, there's Brothers for Life. We also do trainings. There's the Men Engage Africa training initiative, which gets men as well as women to learn more about gender equality, male engagement, and women's rights, so that they can institute that in their own policies and programs, because this area of male engagement is new. Not many people know what it's about. So we try to share our knowledge around that. And we do several other trainings with UN agencies, with religious leaders, basically to share information on these different topics. Yeah.
You mentioned in your speech earlier on that men shouldn't speak for women. Would you like to explain it more precisely?
Sure. I think we are reflecting here on, you know, sort of 20 years since Beijing, 20, you know, years since Cairo, when this call was made to involve men in the gender equality work. And unfortunately, in some cases, it's inspired a kind of backlash, you know, and this kind of men's rights organization that not only try to articulate and motivate for a return to men, a masculinity that's about power and oppression, but, you know, it counters the sort of positive work that's happening about getting men to be pro-feminist. And at the same time, as pro-feminist organizations, we recognize, you know, men's organizations doing this kind of gender equality work from a feminist perspective, we recognize that we're not supposed to take the lead on all issues, you know, that the women have been doing this work before men started doing this work, or before this men's involvement work started. There's been decades of hard work, and I think it's about partnering with women's organizations to see what they need, and also working in a collaborative way, not about speaking on behalf of women. And I think that's a myth that needs to be, or a reality that we need to confront, is that we're not doing this work to speak for women or on behalf of them, but to support gender transformation through male engagement. Yeah.
I can imagine that this is very difficult in practice to keep the balance. So do you maybe have an example of how it went really well, or how this didn't work out so well?
Putting me on the spot. How it worked really well or it didn't work really well. Let me think. The 1 in 9 campaign. I don't know if you remember the Ring the Bell campaign. From a few years ago that was basically speaking to the fact that 1 in 9 women are survivors of violence, and that, you know, that we need to stand up against it. And so we as Sonke took part in that. We supported 1 in 9, which was a campaign, a global campaign that was headed by Breakthrough. I think it's called Breakthrough, yes. And they put out a call for us to learn this dance and to have really visible activism around nonviolence against women. And that was an instance where we took the call, where we partnered, we learned the dance, and we did activism all throughout Cape Town and Johannesburg, basically to put shed light on women's experiences of violence, answering a call that was made. And I think that's one of the ways that women's leadership can call for support, for more collaboration to make these issues more vocal and get more advocacy happening. So that's one of the examples. But you're right, it's a lot of the times very difficult, because as I mentioned in my speech, it's also about space and resources. You know, who has the money to do this work? Who has this? Who should take up space, and in what way? And it's something we always have to negotiate in whatever projects we're doing, and really think through who takes the lead and who doesn't, and what kind of work we should be more visible in, and what kind of work we should kind of take a back step. Yeah.
So which problems are boys and men faced with these days?
Look, I think I'll start by saying that women as a group certainly are far, far more oppressed than men. So I think it's worth saying off the back that, you know, that kind of, you know, we should never lose sight of the fact that women are oppressed far more than men. But I think the same kinds of, but then at the same time, we do have men that are vulnerable. Like, I think I also mentioned there's different kinds of men. There's men because of their sexual orientation who are vulnerable to violence. There's men who are not economically stable, so they suffer economic exclusion, and then they're not able to exercise their masculinity in the same way, because as men, you know, you're supposed to be a provider, you're supposed to have money. So the capitalist and economic context makes also that performance of masculinity very difficult. But I think one of the key areas where we want to put the spotlight, and where Sonke puts the spotlight, is around men's health and vulnerability to HIV and AIDS, and in terms of sexual and reproductive health. I think that's one of the areas where we need a lot of work, because we found that if men have good health-seeking behavior, if they go to clinics, if they test for HIV and other STIs, if they understand, for example, how supporting a woman's right to choose leads to healthier relationships as well. So if men change their behavior, it actually creates better healthy relationships for their partners and for their children. So it's not just about their own well-being and health as men, but how it spreads out into the lives of people around them. So men are very susceptible, because of norms around masculinity, to high use of alcohol, because you're supposed to, you know, drink and party. Men, you know, also that masculinity that says I must have multiple partners, how that puts themselves and others at risk of STIs and HIV. All those norms around masculinity, negative masculinity, have a negative effect on women, on men, other men, and on children. So we really need to address that and get projects and programs around, that are going to motivate men to take their health seriously and be preventative, and not, you know, engage in excessive alcohol consumption, because that also has negative repercussions. Yeah.
Can you tell us your greatest success during your work?
Yes, I think, you know, this work, sometimes you lose sight of the stories of transformation because you're so busy dealing with convincing people and, you know, or workshopping around, you know, trying to get people to understand gender equality, particularly men. And I think for me, When I hear stories of change, that's when those are my most happy moments. So before, I used to coordinate the Men Engage Africa training initiative that I talked about, which is about teaching programmers about, you know, knowledge and skills on male engagement and gender equality. And one of the participants started off being very kind of anti-feminist and very, I was like, how are you a programmer? How can you say these things, you know? And that was at the start of the workshop. And as the workshop progressed, you could see the change happening in his head, you know, and he would say things like, oh my gosh, I didn't realize I was oppressing my partner. I didn't realize, you know, the personal change that he spoke about. And it's, his story is in one of the books we produced. And now, you know, he hasn't made a change just at the programmatic level to think through gender and how it impacts, but in his personal life, taking on more of the domestic work, raising his child, you know, supporting women's right to choose. It's just such a powerful story. And it was a 10-day workshop. So, you know, you don't need like a six, some men, you don't need to have like 6 years or 6 months. Change can happen in a very short term and for a long time. And now we work with him even now. I was just with him last week at another conference we invited him to on religious leaders and sexual rights. And he was a very positive voice in the room. So I've seen him since that was 2013. It's now 2015 and he's still on that journey. Yes, he slips out. Yes, sometimes I have to say, but you know what you said there was a bit questionable or whatever. But we talked through it and he's learning. And so those stories of change for me, and there are many, 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 are very powerful and very motivate me personally to keep doing the work. Yeah.
Can you tell us your biggest failure in
my life? Oh, no. I have lots of those in my work. What is the biggest failure? I think that's a difficult one.
So what's really difficult, maybe?
Yeah, I think it's difficult as a feminist sometimes to do this work, because I sometimes wonder if I should be doing, and I mean, the thing is, if I should be doing more in a more directly women's rights feminist organization, and or should I, you know, keep working in Sonke, where we work more with men's role in responsibilities in gender equality, because the women's rights sector and women's organizations, and rightly so, are very critical of this work, you know, and what it means and what it does and how it furthers their agenda. And I always have to reflect on why I'm here, you know, and sometimes it can be very challenging as a feminist. But I understand where women are coming from, and I also recognize that no matter where you come at it from, we're all trying to work for the same vision, you know, right? A gender-free world where men, women, trans people, people with different sexual orientations can be free. So whether I'm here or I'm in a trans movement or, you know, I think the vision is the same. So I try to remind myself of that. But yeah, it can be difficult sometimes. Yeah.
So, do you have three advices for people who want to engage men and boys?
I think the first step is make sure that your agenda is feminist. Yeah. <Okay. laughs> I think that, yeah, don't be going there if you don't have a feminist human rights perspective. I think that's critical. Otherwise, the work can go in a different direction. Mm-hmm. And I think try to find allies. Where are the good? I mean, because they're not men, not all men are bad, right? So where are the quote unquote good men doing good feminist work or good gender equality work, and make them really visible and allow them to share their stories of journeys of transformation? Because it seems like, especially, I'm surprised to learn that in the Austrian context, it's new work. I didn't know that. I assumed that because maybe I was thinking of Sweden, but I just assumed that, you know, men were gender equal and there's nothing to do here, but it seems like that's not the case. So I think you need to make those men who are visible talk more and write about them in the media and their journeys, so that there's another, people can understand that there's another masculinity out there, that you don't have to be this kind of oppressive, money-oriented, you know, alcohol, excessive alcohol drinking man, that you can actually be with your family and your partners and your children and support gender equality. I think that's another key thing. And maybe the third thing is, yeah, collaborate. We have connected struggles. I think don't try to change things on your own. Like, what's, you know, you need to partner with women's organizations and trans and sexuality minority movements, and because it's the same struggle. And the more we come together and voice the, because what we want is gender norms transformation. We want people to be freer. So partnerships are really key as well, is what I would advise. Yeah.
So thank you so much. It was great to hear all these advices. Do you want to say anything?
Since today, I think about doing the same as you, like going to engage men and boys. So I'm really happy about these advices.
Oh, great.
Feminist agenda is already there. And yeah, really so happy to to have the opportunity to talk to you, because you're so powerful woman. And yeah, and I think you just should keep going on what you're doing.
Thank you. That's so encouraging. Thank you so much. And I also wish you luck with your feminist agenda in the men, in the men's work, transformation work. So good luck. Yeah. And great initiative as well. The radio media is very important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Mit diesen visionären Worten verabschieden wir uns.
globale Dialoge.
New Development World Goals, what's in it for women?
Ensure healthy lives and promote well-being for all at all ages.
End poverty in all its forms everywhere.
Ensure availability and sustainable management of water and sanitation for all.
Achieve gender equality and empower all women and girls.
These are among 17 Sustainable Development Goals that were adopted in September 2015 in New York, when the world global leaders met and determined the future of the world. By 2030, the world aims to achieve gender equality and empower all women and girls, but the new development agenda adopted by the United Nations does not live up to the previous hard-fought commitments toward gender equality and provides only a fragmented plan to empowering half the world's population. This is the press release by Joan Lee of the post-2015 Women's Coalition. She's analyzing important issues such as sexual and reproductive health and rights that has not been clearly stipulated in these sustainable development goals, or how gender equality is going to be realized, as well as issues of peace and security. Welcome to the program Global Dialogue. I'm your host, Ashura Kaipaipa. You can call me Ash. Today, I am discussing New World Goals by 2030. What's in it? With me is Magdalena Kien. She's an advocacy officer for the Light for the World. Magdalena Kien, she represented civil society organizations in New York this September 2015, when the United Nations was adopting the New World Goals considered as Sustainable Development Goals. Magdalena Kien, she's an expert in inclusive education as well as from the Millennium Development Goals towards Sustainable Development Goals. She has been very actively involved in shaping the processes and shaping the world goals through her participation in the civil society organization. Here is our opening music from Tim McMorris, Shape the World. Enjoy the music. We'll be right back.
Give because you are to end love. Because it's right, live the way that life was meant to be lived. Oh, and smile because it makes you feel good, and laugh so that the world gets brighter. Cry, but make it tears of joy as time goes by. Yeah, hold your hands up and be carefree. Go and make someone's day and let them see that hope is still here, that hope is still near. Be the change in the world that you want to see. And together we can change the course of history. Oh, it's true, but only you can change you. Yeah, I want to shape the world into a place where freedom reigns in the human race. A world where we all get along and work to right all that is wrong. I want to shape the world into a place where smiles are there from face to face. Safety's found in every nation. Peace is brought to all creation. Let's shape our world. But it all starts with me. Oh, no, never give up and press when times get tough. And know that all things are possible if you believe. Yeah, shine. You gotta shine real bright, cause it helps to keep you going till your dreams take flight. And give all you can from sunrise right through to the night. Yeah, yeah.
Welcome back. You're listening to Global Dialogue with me, Ashura Kaipayupa. In the studio, I have Magdalena Kien, and we are discussing New World Goals by 2030. What's in it?
The MDGs, I don't know if people know that the MDGs stand for the Millennium Development Goals. They were a total of 8 goals, and they really concentrated on very specific areas of poverty and development. They were in a way successful because some of these goals, for example, on poverty, reducing poverty, or gender equality, fight against HIV/AIDS and other diseases, was successful. So that's a good part. On the other hand, some of the MDGs have not been met. They have not been successful. So work on these goals still has to continue. So, for example, the goal on child mortality has not been reached. Also, maternal mortality, so mothers dying or mothers dying at childbirth, women dying. And also the goal on education has not been reached so far. And the MDGs, in a way, were really concentrating on the easy wins, or on the low-hanging fruits, you could say. So they were concentrating on reaching averages. They did not focus on those people that were most marginalized, living in the most remote areas. So, yeah, I would say the result of the MDGs is quite mixed still. And the SDGs have really, they have to continue with the work that started with the MDGs, but they're much broader in scale. There's a huge difference between these two sets of goals. The MDGs really focused on the Global South. So they were goals for developing countries. They focused on poverty, on hunger, on primary education, gender equality, and so on. But they did not go into detail, for example, for vulnerable groups such as persons with disabilities. They were completely left out from the MDGs. They were not mentioned anywhere, neither in the goals or in their targets. And that led to severe exclusion, and just persons with disabilities were forgotten in programs to implement the MDGs. You were asking me what's the difference now with the SDGs. The SDGs, their scope is really universal. They are global. They are called the Global Agenda for Sustainable Development. That means that now every state around the world has the responsibility to implement these goals. And in a way, the state leaders, the global leaders in New York, committed to these goals. And it means that the goals are not only valid for developing countries, but also for the industrialized countries, or the global north, if you want. So that means that also states such as Austria now have to look at their policies and their programs, for example, on education, or health, or gender equality, and to see how they can improve and how they can meet the goals and the targets. So that's the big difference. And another thing in the SDGs is they have this very strong and important underlying principle, which is called leave no one behind. And that means that the goals, they really have to reach everybody, and every person and every group has to be reached by these goals. So during the SDG summit in New York, state leaders also said none of these new goals will be a success or will be considered met unless it's met for every group and every person.
What has Magdalena Kane has got to say when it comes to civil society organization and participation?
Civil society, NGOs, and also disabled people's organizations have played an important role. And they also have been mentioned explicitly in the agenda. So in the SDGs, civil society is mentioned as an important actor and an important partner to reach these goals. And so over the last 3 or 3.5 years, there have been so many consultations globally and nationally and regionally on different topics and issues. So I feel that compared with the MDGs, there has been a huge progress also on civil society participation.
From Millennium Development Goals, and today we have Sustainable Development Goals. Are these goals realistic? Are these goals relevant? Why are they so important? Why are we discussing this?
the SDGs are much more detailed and specific. So but at the same time, they are very ambitious. So I think that if they're taken seriously by our leaders, by the governments, and also by the organizations, that they can make a huge difference. They can be understood as a real call to action for to states. So in that way, yes, they can be of meaning. At the same time, maybe going away from hopes more to what's the challenges. People say that they are too broad, they are too ambitious, that they are meaningless because they are so broad. I'm not sure about that, but I think there's still a lot of work to do in really holding our governments and our states accountable so that they take the commitments that they made in New York seriously. These goals really are relevant for the whole world, and they are also relevant for us here in Austria. So I really also, I wish that they can really be the frame also for improving the rights and the lives of people in Austria. I mean, we still have so much work to do here. We have to make sure that women finally gain as much money as men do. And we have to make sure that women are really represented equally in politics and not as is now the case, you know, in Upper Austria where there's not one woman in the government. So I think we have so much work to do, but at the same time, we have to keep up the spirit and trust that this can make a difference.
You are still listening to 94.0 Radio Orange this afternoon with me, Ashura Kaipayupa. New World Goals by 2030 was in it. Sustainable Development Goals are inclusive and holistic. But what everything's missing?
I think that quality is an issue. At the same time, as we said before, the goals are sometimes quite broad also in their scale, and then that could mean that they're a bit vague also. What's really crucial there is then the monitoring and the measuring of the goals and their implementation. And that's a process that's still ongoing now. So currently there is an international expert and interagency group. It's very complicated. That works on the indicators. So on the tools to really measure the progress. And that's where also then the quality question comes in. So you would really have to be specific on how would you measure good and qualitative and inclusive education, for example. What kind of markers do you need? What benchmarks do you need? So that's the process that's still in development right now. The indicators for the SDGs will be finalized in March 2016. So there's still a few months ahead, but the work really happens now. And also civil society, again, has a strong role to play to make sure that, for example, the indicators are not too generic. So for, again, to come back to persons with disabilities, we have to make sure that persons with disabilities are really mentioned also in the indicators. So how many children with disabilities can attend school? What's the percentage? And not only in primary school, but in secondary school, in vocational training, in tertiary education, so in universities, it's really important to get that right. One of the biggest challenges, as always, is money. So the finance of the goals is still an issue, of course. If states do not provide also the funds to implement these goals, then how can they be meaningful and how can they be implemented? So that's a big, big issue, of course. I think that states in different regions of the world really now have to work together, because these new goals are universal and global, and they also have this principle of common responsibility. And at the same time, the mechanisms to also monitor the goals will be a kind of a peer monitoring mechanism. So the states can also look at each other and say, okay, you are not good in, on this area, but you have made progress in this area. And, you know, also really basically sharing experiences and learning from each other. That's the hope that I have, although it might sound a bit dreamy.
If you just tune in 94.0, you're listening to Global Dialogue. In the studio, I'm your host, Ashura Koipayupa. You call me Ash. And I have my dear guest, Magdalena Kien from The Light for the World. And she's working there as an advocacy officer for the last few years. And today we're discussing New World Goals by 2030. What's in it?
So one of our roles as part of civil society is also to be kind of a watchdog, you know, to remind states of their responsibilities and that they really play their part. At the same time, we can be a partner. So, for example, for the governments in our partner countries in Africa, Asia, Latin America, Eastern Europe, we can assist, we can work together with civil society in these countries, but also with government entities. So the SDGs really provide a very good framework for this cooperation, I think. Because we have to keep in mind that they are a bit of it's an agreement still on a low level of states. You know, 193 states had to agree on this text and on these goals. So, and they have different opinions and different priorities and different cultures and everything. So some things, of course, were not mentioned. So one specific example, you will not find any information on the rights of LGBTI people, for example, in the goals, because some states would not have agreed on that. So yes, there are things missing. Some things are maybe a bit vague, for example, on gender equality. The goal is we will ensure gender equality exists in 2030. How will we ensure that? And we are quite a far away from that. Yeah.
Rudely Interrupted is an Austrian band which consists of disabled and non-disabled musicians, and they encourage us to see people and not their disability, and above all, they make great music. Let's enjoy the music, close my eyes, and we'll be right back.
Yeah.
Rudely interrupted with a very good music, Close My Eyes. I like the music. I like the idea that we should see people first with no regard of their incapability when it comes to physical challenges, because everyone has got one. Some you can see and some you cannot. It was great to have you in the studio with me, Magdalena Ken. Thank you very much for your experience and expertise from the involvement in the processes of adopting the New World Goals by 2030. What's your final thought on the development agenda 2015 to 2030?
I just want to emphasize again also that these goals really are relevant for the whole world, and they are also relevant for us here in Austria. So I really also, I wish that they can really be the frame also for improving the rights and the lives of people in Austria. I mean, we still have so much work to do here on education, on making sure that every child with a disability can go to school together with their peers, and not in special schools, for example. Or we have to make sure that women finally gain as much money as men do. And we have to make sure that women are really represented equally in politics and not as is now the case, you know, in my own province, Upper Austria, where there's not one woman in government. So I think we have so much work to do, but at the same time, we have to keep up the spirit and trust that this can make a difference.
Before I prepared the program, I was looking what other people are saying about these new world goals. What are their opinions and what are their concerns? And with me is a press release by the post-2015 Women's Coalition that was prepared by John Lee, who says that technically the new World Goals has failed to express some of the very critical issues that are affecting half the world's population, who are women. The statement says, by 2030, the world aims to achieve gender equality and empower all women and girls. But the new development agenda adopted by the United Nations, UN, does not live up to the previous hard-fought commitments toward gender equality and provides only a fragmented plan to empowering half the world's population. She is really expressing, for instance, four critical issues such as peace and conflict, mentioning that in places like Middle East and North Africa region where there's increased militarism, terrorism and conflict, as well as foreign occupation, which are key sources of violence against women and girls who face marginalization and exclusion in decision-making processes. So when we are talking about, for instance, Security Council, Resolution 1325, what are the role or involvement of women, for example? Because from this statement, it shows and it's clear by obvious evidence that women are victim and in most cases suffer when there's a conflict or there's an absence of peace. Yeah, she's also mentioning about the role of human rights organizations, which is a shame. Almost half of the world's countries have implemented restrictive laws to inhibit human rights organizations, which in most cases these organizations are working towards women's empowerment as well as the human rights of women. So in this case, in these most countries that have restrictive laws, that women will be left behind because they have no advocate for their rights. In this statement by Joan Lee, she's also mentioning the issue of sexual and reproductive health and rights, that in so many countries in the world, for instance, they prohibit education on sexuality as well as sexual and reproductive health. And this means that women are the victim. And therefore, if there is no education, if there's no resources, for example, for women to decide how many children they can have, to decide on their bodies, on their sexuality, then it will be problematic for them to take part in the fulfillment or in achieving the world global goals. A sustainable development goals number 4 and 5 are explicitly discussing the issues of women's empowerment, inclusive education, but it doesn't provide how this can be realized or achieved. There is a gap in financing gender equality, that the lack of financing for gender equality in the Africa region, where it poses a serious threat to the achievement of the sustainable development goals, because then it will be considered supporting gender equality is a charity and not a responsibility of the government state to provide resources and ensuring that there are some mechanism in achieving gender equality for all. So this could be a few of them. Tell us your opinion, dear listener. What do you think? Are these sustainable development goals achievable by 2030? If you've got any opinion, you can join us on our Facebook page, Global Dialogue, and share with us your comment, opinion, or you have got any question. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for being with us today in the Global Dialogue. I hope this was very inclusive discussion and very insightful for you to understand the development agenda and this new world goals that the world aims to achieve by 2030. And this is none other but sustainable development goals. I would like to leave you the very good music from Tracy Chapman, and who is talking about a revolution, because we are hoping that the sustainable development goals will bring about a revolution by changing the mindset, the system, and the politics of how we implement and evaluate and monitor development. And we are really hopeful that we will be able to achieve this very inclusive world goals by 2030.
Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. While they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment line, don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds whisper. Who are people gonna rise up and get their share? Who are people gonna rise up and take what's there? Don't you know you better run, 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 run. Talking about a revolution. It's finally the day.
I believe this was informative. We have learned what were the Millennium Development Goals, and now we know that we have Sustainable Development Goals. Let's play our part. Let's work together and achieve the new global goals by 2030. Until next time, bye for now.
Globale Dialoge.
Se anal hawe, mujeres en onda, maita in der Luft.
O radio no, nanako.
Donne in aria.
Women on air.
Jeden Dienstag von 13 bis 14 Uhr auf Orange 94.0. Immer abrufbar auf www.noso.at.